Hi, this is Donna Durker, and I'm here with Katie Byrne and also Beach Christie. And Katie's going to interview Beach tonight. Katie Byrne is a licensed psychotherapist, harm reduction specialist, and addiction therapist, writer, editor, author of the book The Courage to Speak Up. Beach Christie coordinates MM face-to-face meetings worldwide. This is Moderation Management, MM. She also leads the New York City Women's MM group. She has certificates in harm reduction psychotherapy and coaching and is a mindfulness-based stress reduction, or MBSR, teacher. She also plays and teaches the oboe professionally on Broadway, Carnegie Hall, and so on. So, go ahead and take it away, Katie.
Well, Beej, I'm so honored to get to talk with you after receiving your brilliant emails all these months.
Thank you.
God, it must be really exciting to be facilitating people in big New York City. Wow, that's great. I wanted to start with the question, what do you find helps people succeed with managing their drinking most? Because we know that AA has been around Alcoholics Anonymous for many, many years, and we know that this is a pioneering program. Moderation is about moderating and regulating our drinking. And so do you notice things that are most helpful to people in the process?
Yeah, a lot of things. Community, knowing that there are other people who are struggling with the same issue as you are, also knowing that there are people who have overcome problem drinking and are able to moderate successfully. There are many tools that we talk about in MM. I think it has to do with becoming acutely aware of your inner experience as well as your outer experience. So there are what I call the external tools as well as the internal tools. When I started the women's meeting, it was interesting. We had, you know, MM co-ed meetings in New York, and they're wonderful. They were mostly male-dominated. So I kind of started to wonder, you know, where are the women? Because they would come in, and then they would kind of be very meek and not say much, and then we'd never see them again. So when I started the women's meeting, I noticed a big difference in that the men tend to treat the problem externally. They work with external tools, things, and the women do too, but for me it has to be a combination of external and internal, and I'll explain that in a minute. But external tools are things like counting, figuring out right away, right off the bat, where you are, how many drinks per week, in a very non-judgmental way, so that you're just simply noticing where you are, and so that the only way that you can really change is and figure out where you're going is to know where you're starting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So becoming, as I said, acutely aware of your inner and outer experience. So examples of the external tools aside from counting, which is, it's funny, some people use apps, their phone to count, like if they're out. Some of the guys talk about toothpicks or coins, putting a certain number, like this is the number of drinks I'm going to have tonight, and they'll put however many toothpicks in one pocket and then transfer them over to another pocket, or they can do this with coins or whatever. It's kind of funny because one of the guys was saying that he lost track of like which pocket was which at one point during the evening. But there might be, you know, like a more accurate way of counting. But so that's one external tool. If you know you're going to go into a challenging situation, first of all, you can avoid certain triggering situations. But if there's some that you really can't or don't want to particularly avoid, there are a lot of tools you can use, such as eating before. Eating slows down the effects of the alcohol. You're more apt to feel satisfied with drinking less. Arriving late to the party. The party, starts at 8, arrive at 9 or 9:30. And if sometimes people say, well, I can't because I'm in charge of this event. I have to be there on time. Yeah. So in that case, you can make a really, you know, concrete rule. I'm not going to drink before X time. Delay, 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 delay. Delay the first drink. Delay the first sip. Delay the second sip. Mm-hmm. Drink other stuff in between. Eat in between. Don't drink while you're eating. Slow down. Keep an eye on the clock. Some people moderate simply by saying, okay, I'm going to make this drink last half an hour or an hour or whatever it is, and so that they go by rather than counting how many drinks is how many drinks per hour. Pace yourself with the slowest drinker. And basically getting, well, we talked about this earlier in the call, but getting very, very curious in a non-judgmental way about your experience. Compassionately curious. This has to do with your internal experience. Say you're a person with social anxiety, and you show up at an event and you're feeling uncomfortable. So just noting what uncomfortable feels like to you and actually sitting with that feeling, like, what is it, is this tolerable? How long can I tolerate this before I really feel like I need to have a drink? And chances are you can actually tolerate it a little bit longer. And then, you know, each time you try it might be a little bit longer, a little bit longer. So just feeling what it feels like to feel insecure and vulnerable and that it won't kill you. You can actually sit with that feeling for a little while. So it's practicing actually being with these uncomfortable feelings, learning to work with difficult emotions and cravings. Most difficult emotions and cravings, believe it or not, science says that they really by themselves only last 90 seconds, a couple minutes. But what happens is we add on. So a difficult emotion comes up, and so it's like, oh, I'm angry. And then we start feeding the anger and feeding it rather than just sitting back, taking a step back and saying, anger is present. Don't necessarily have to do something about that. There's a wonderful technique called RAIN, R-A-I-N. You can Google it. It talks about working with difficult emotions and cravings in that for the first thing you do is recognize the emotion is present or the craving is present, allow or accept, like it's okay that I'm experiencing this rather than trying to fight it because fighting it just makes it worse. And investigating. I is for investigating where in my body is this coming up? What am I feeling? Where am I tensing up? And just noticing and just trying to release that part of the body. What are the thoughts that are coming? What are the emotions that I'm feeling right now? Can I accept those? Is it okay? What are the thoughts I'm having about this? Am I making up stories? Am I creating more here than is actually here? Something happens. We get a, just give you an example. So-and-so hasn't texted me back. I can make myself crazy making up stories about why that is, or I can just be with the actual fact that the person didn't text me back.
Right.
So this is all part of working with the difficult emotions, and the cravings, noticing that they're not solid, they're changing all the time, we're changing all the time, Googling urge surfing. There's a lot of material out there on urge surfing. Breathing. Breathing is huge. I had one client who, after a couple of months working with me, I said, you know, she was doing really, really well with the moderating, and I was really impressed. And I said to her, you know, what do you attribute this to? Thinking she'd say, you know, well, you're brilliant coaching, of course. But she actually said, breathing, you know, just paying attention to my breath. So, I mean, for her, that was her recovery. It was all about learning to breathe, learning to pay attention to her breathing process. Another thing that's really important is to know what you're getting out of each drink. There are many answers to this question, and it varies from drink to drink, from person to person, situation to situation. Is it soothing? I have one client who describes it as a hug to her, you know. And is there a way to get that soothing feeling some other way? And also just accepting that that's what it is for her right now, and it might change in the future, but it's okay that that's what she's getting from it as long as she recognizes it. Another thing is used to enhance a certain emotion or experience. Joy, for instance. Another one is drowning and numbing certain emotions that are difficult. Sometimes it's used to access an emotion, to feel elation, for instance, to be able to grieve, to be with sadness. Maybe it's to feel a part of things socially. So I kind of think of like a glass of wine is a glass of emotions. So you have all these emotions, and you have these emotions churning around in your heart and your belly, and then you've got this glass of emotions, and you're pouring those emotions onto the emotions that are already there, and it's like kind of like a volcanic kind of eruption. So to become just acutely aware of what each sip feels like. I have a friend that often says, I don't understand why when I go to a wine tasting, I feel like I get more buzzed than when I go out drinking. I think, well, it's because you're paying attention. You're actually noticing how each sip feels, whereas when you're focused on just drinking, you're just drinking more rapidly. So slowing things down, becoming incredibly aware of every single sip and how it feels. Mindful drinking, in other words. Meditation is hugely helpful for a lot of people. In meditation, you're actually becoming familiar with your mind. That's what it is. It's making friends with all the different parts of your mind, even the parts that are difficult, that we don't necessarily even like. But befriending, as Tara Brach would say, tending and befriending these different parts of ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, what I hear with what you're saying, Beej, is a lot of things like delaying the drink, delaying, slowing things down. Planning is something we talk about on our calls a lot, which has really helped me. Like, okay, I'm going to a party. How am I going to do this? How many drinks will I have? And all those things. I love when you said, know what you're getting out of each drink. I was thinking that, Donna, that would be great in the principles of the program. I don't know if it's formal enough, but it's really well put. And then I thought when you said have a glass, or, talking about a glass of emotions, I thought, okay, there's the title of your book, Beej. glass of emotions. That's brilliant. Huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep,
thank you.
I've already started that. So I wanted to also kind of add on a couple things that, one of the things I thought of when you were talking is, as far as the internal experience, my experience with my own many addictions that I've had, it's that inner child inside. Mm-hmm. That wants to feel belonging, wants to feel loved, wants to feel relaxed, wants to be
to feel
happy.
Soothed,
you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's another way of talking about it. We're talking about moderation management here tonight, and I wanted to say that in the principles on the website, there's this great sentence that kind of underlies what you're saying too. We share our strategies for successful moderation and the restoration of balance, which include both changes in behavior and the management of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, a lot of what you've been talking about, both the external and the internal, and the tools.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get on to the tools for a minute. So what do you find in terms of the solutions, how moderation management is a program for people who want to manage, regulate, moderate their drinking for the most part? Some people choose to stop drinking, but it's a program based on individuals who are unique in the way that they approach their moderation.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, what do you find, and I'm so interested that you're in New York, which is such a buzzing, brilliant city, full of so many very interesting and intelligent people. So what do you find are the predominant themes as people come in and they share their struggles in moderation management? What kinds of themes come to your mind, the main struggles?
Right off the bat, triggers are triggers. Everyone has to discover their own triggers, and there's a lot of investigation that has to happen around that. I think one of the main challenges people face is giving up too easily. I think that, and not believing in the process, because, there's a collective brainwashing that's been taking place over the last 75, 80 years. I might as well name AA, even though I do think it's a wonderful program for the small percentage of people that fit into that exact type of drinker. But to quote Gabriel Glaser, who's the author of Her Best Kept Secret, Why Women Drink and How They Can Regain Control, the problem with AA is that they dump everyone into one container. And the fact of the matter is, everyone who drinks is different and has a different pattern. It's just so fascinating to me, having been in this for several years now. Overdrinking is a symptom. There's a reason why mm-hmm. people overdrink. It's not you're an overdrinker because you're an overdrinker. That makes no sense.
Right.
You're an overdrinker right. because of something, and because of many things usually. Many times I see so much anxiety in people. It's heartbreaking. I see so much self-loathing. So I would say the big challenge is giving up too easily, not believing in the process, not believing in your own innate wisdom that you can solve this, not having enough support, not asking for support, or ceasing to put energy into it. It's like being on a diet. Any diet, every diet works, but it only works as long as you keep doing it. And noting also that we're constantly changing.
Yeah.
We are, like, if you look at us, you know, we're like a mountain. We look solid, but inside, you know, there's all these, you know, if you look carefully at a mountain, there's currents going on. There's all kinds of stuff going on internally, right? So
right.
we're just constantly changing. So our circumstances change, and we can't expect to be able to use the same tools every single time. And I think that's where people get tripped up too. They say, I had this. What happened? And it's really important to look at what happened.
Mm-hmm.
What changed?
Yeah. I mean, that's
in
really
a non-judgmental
well
way. Again.
Right. That's really well put. I mean, I think that could be half of your book right there, because you know.
You're funny.
You know, because there is so much trial and error, because it isn't exactly linear. I mean, it isn't.
Right, not at all. Yeah.
Right.
We're going in and out.
Not at all. Right.
Mm-hmm. I think I posted on my the women's group here in New York. I send out a kind of a blog every week, and I talked about the phases of change last week and how we go in and out of these phases, and it's okay. But just recognize,
mm-hmm.
oh, wow, now I'm back in this phase, and it's okay to be back there. I'm back here
right.
because, you know,
right.
I lost my job or my parent is ill or whatever it is, you know.
Right. Right. And, you know, I had written, I looked over your notes from the meetings, the last number of notes that you send out. And, you know, because I always tell you, I just love your notes from the meetings because they
Thank
help
you.
Me. And I like them because they're in a kind of real language. It's not formal. Mm-hmm. It's just, okay, a lot of people came to the meeting tonight and here were some of the themes. And I made a few notes of, you know, one of the phrases I picked out was, I don't know if this was exactly from your notes, but I was thinking about the different parts of ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have
mm-hmm.
an inner adult, we have an inner child, we have an inner angry person, we have, you know, an inner starving, you know, child, you know, all these parts. And so each one of those parts has to be explored, and it makes
mm-hmm.
sense to me. You know,
and accepted.
Yeah.
And loved.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. And
mm-hmm.
loved. Oh, my God.
Right.
That's
right.
another
and
whole. That's the other half of the book. Right.
Yeah, but also to recognize that we all have this rational side, which is the side that shows
right.
up to meetings. Generally, the drinker, the irrational drinker, is not the one that shows up to therapy or meetings. And so that person needs to be invited in as well. We need to talk
well,
to her.
I would like to just at this moment say we're being facilitated by Donna Durker, and I don't know how you'd like to introduce yourself, Donna, but I want
I'm
to
I'm one of the
you.
Many volunteers at Moderation Management.
Okay. And I'm Katie Byrne in conversation with Beege Christie. We're both harm reduction coaches and counselors and other things that we don't have time to mention, but they were in the introduction. I want to throw out things that cause us to drink, like loneliness. I think you had in your notes, somebody said, Beege, at a meeting, I'm dating alcohol.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, I really relate to that. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's a relationship. And I want to ask you, I knew this time would fly by, Is there any other main message you want to make sure you get into this broadcast?
Well, I just thought of when you said that, I didn't mention the alone drinkers. I was talking mostly about social drinking. The way to work with alone drinking is, well, one of the ways, I should say, or many ways, in addition to what we've been talking about, getting to know yourself internally, the meditation, the loving kindness, if you can practice feeling loving feelings towards yourself, that's a whole other chapter. But also the external way is buying smaller quantities and making mm-hmm. them last. Buy half bottles of wine, buy little airplane bottles of liquor, whatever it is, and just notice what it takes for you. If it means I'm going to start drinking later, I'm going to drink slower, I'm going to drink half of this and then drink something else, and then, or if I'm going to mix in some seltzer with my wine or whatever it is to make it last. So you learn the tools to make it last and still drink less.
Absolutely. That actually has helped me a lot, and I'm glad you reminded me. You mentioned in your notes, people, there's so much more we could say, but we do have to wrap up. Mm-hmm. Things like people talking about glamorizing drinking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
remember when cigarettes were like that? I mean, that was
yeah.
so women's liberation
mm-hmm.
for me.
Yeah, Gabrielle Glazer talks about that a lot. If you read her book, she
yeah.
talks about the advertising industry having a big effect on women drinking.
Yeah, I know. Okay. I actually reviewed that book. There are many good
mm-hmm.
books, and a lot of them are on the site. Any
yeah.
last things that you'd like to say or remind people before we wrap up, because I think we've probably got about less than a minute left.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me on. If anyone wants to check out my website, it's insightoutnyc.com. Insight, I-N-S-I-G-H-T, insightoutnyc.com. Thank you so much for having me on the program.
Oh, you're so welcome. And I'm Katie Byrne, and I can be reached here, too, at katyb-yrne.com on the web. Anybody have questions, please feel free reaching out, talking to each other. That was one of your first comments, Beej,
mm-hmm.
about how
mm-hmm.
community is such a key and welcoming people to our program, no matter how much shame we have or how much confusion. And we're having a really wonderful community.
That's my last word. If I could change one thing, it would be the shame around this.
Thank you. That's well to say again. And this is about moderation management with Beej Christie, Donna Durker. I'm Katie Byrne, and we will be back.
Thank you.
Thank you both so much.